Hey, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Board of Supervisors meeting on July the 16th, 2014. Right now, I'd like to call the meeting to order, and let's stand and have a pledge. After the pledge, we'll have a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. County Administrator's report?
Yes, ma'am. Two notes before I begin the report. There's one item on your agenda that is marked on your green agenda as number five, the action matter for the Ag Forestal Committee. That's going to be deferred because the person who was on the list for that was on the list for two different boards and commissions, and after she found out that both of them are opening, she decided she wanted to do the other one instead. So we'll have both these on a future meeting where we can do appointments. I think she's going to be going to the BZA, and we'll look for other candidates for this one. So that's deferred. And then secondly, you requested questions on tab I on the Hotel Street Capital SUP and ZMP. If you want to take any action on that to defer, I would suggest you do it at the beginning of the meeting rather than waiting till that time. That's up to you.
Finish? That's it.
I can go on the floor. I just didn't know if you want to consider that now.
Oh, the deferral?
Yes.
Plus, I'm really surprised it was the
I wanted him to do the report while everybody's here.
It's up to you?
Yes, please.
Just give
your report.
Sure. Great. So a number of things to go out to talk about. The new senior services program, part of our new phased-in program, kicked off with a bang on Monday, that's right, down in Scottsville. NBC 29 actually came out to do some video on that, and we appreciate there were 21 attendees at the first session at the Scottsville VFW. Thank you to Bill Hughes, the Scottsville VFW commander, and the entire post for allowing us to use their facility. And they talked to the residents that were there and found out what kinds of things they want to do and the types of activities that would be useful. So this is the first step in that partnership with JAVA and with other organizations in the county to outreach in other areas besides just in our Fort Keene Community Center. That program is led by Jonathan Pace in our Parks and Rec Department, and he received assistance from Kay Carter, one of our part-time staff members. So a good first start. The Munis Employee Self-Service Program is going gangbusters, thanks really to two people. Gail Parrish, our HR manager, has been leading that. But we really want to thank Melinda Payne from... Oh, sorry, I put a typo there too, that's M-A. Melinda Payne from Parks and Rec, she's really taken on a role of training the Employee Self-Service and doing a lot of assistance with Ms. Parrish, but getting out to departments and showing them how to do it and how to use the Employee Self-Service System. For all those that are on the system so far, it's pretty easy to use. It's great for tracking our time off and payroll issues. And you can put in your exemptions and change those automatically yourself, your phone number, your home address, so that everything is correct in our systems. Library, again, like every summer, a great big hit with lots of things going on. Mike Klee's Magic Show only had 268 people there. There were 300, but 32 disappeared. On July 9th, the Chesapeake Bay Critters had a great program, and I heard today that was over 300 people. They all stayed. And I heard that there was an owl program or something like that today. So they had a great program today, too. But when you get 200 or 300 kids and families at the library, that's really a great event. And it's such a beautiful facility. For anyone that's never been to a public library, check it out. It's fantastic. I'd like to give kudos to Bobby Popowitz and Cheryl Wilkins. Bobby's our community development director, as most know, and Cheryl's our emergency services coordinator. But they created this new infrastructure and economic development roadmap that is a really great brochure for citizens in the county that talks about where we're going with economic development and infrastructure and how it would affect the county and the kinds of things that information that people have asked about. So there's a number of these out in the lobby that people can pick up on their way out, and they'll be available at other community events and things too. But really nice job, a really professional job getting this done. And I think we've got double the order, because the place that we ordered them from did something different and decided to go double order, and it cost about under $150, I think, for the, I think we got 1,000. So a great brochure for our citizens, and good information on what's going on in the county when it comes to infrastructure and economic development. We'd like to send a shout out to Kenny Mills. He's the president of Savon Cleaning Services in Keswick, up in Troy Keswick area. He's been in business for 47 years this year, and pretty amazing. Not a lot of business, not a lot of small businesses, especially, stay in business for 47 years. So we really appreciate his business here in Flavanna. A couple of new laws that took effect this last legislative session. People have heard about hunting on Sundays. That does not mean you can go hunt for anything on Sundays anytime. There are restrictions. So make sure that if you're a hunter and you decide you want to hunt on Sundays, stay away from churches. Make sure that you know what the rules are about what you can hunt on Sundays. There are specific distance limits for houses of worship, and also types of hunting that you can do on Sundays, and the permission you need for hunting in certain areas. The Department of Game and Inland Fisheries would certainly have information on their website, and the Sheriff's Office can answer questions about that too. The other thing is the new statewide maximum speed limit for non-paved roads is now 35 miles an hour. That's on all gravel roads and non-surface treated roads in the Commonwealth. And so even though they're not posted, they used to be 55 miles an hour, it's kind of hard to go on most gravel roads at 55 miles an hour safely. But they are 35 miles an hour, and make sure that you're aware of that, because we still have a number of gravel roads in our county that we may be able to make some extra revenue off if you hit 45.
You know, I noticed they changed the 25 miles over the driving.
Yes, ma'am, they took that down.
Right. Yeah, people noticed it right away, but there's no, so what's the speed limit there?
I think that's a rural rustic road is 55 miles an hour, because it's not posted. That's what those type of roads are listed at, 55, unless there is other roads, for the paved roads like that, it's 55 unless there's something else put in place.
Okay.
And that was the risk of doing the speed study there, of either taking the old 25s out near the movie theater, the outdoor theater, and having the risk of it just opening back up to a regular rural rustic road, or kind of leaving that in place as a buffer. But we can certainly, if there are problems with that or the traffic incidents along there, we can certainly have VDOT come back and look at that after some measure of time to see if that makes sense to stay that way.
Okay.
And I know a couple of citizens actually talked to me about it. They were worried because there had been a couple of accidents where people run off the road into the front yard of people's houses along that stretch a little farther down. And so it may be something we just need to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
In preparation for the grand opening of the Pleasant Grove House and the Wine Festival that's coming up on September 27th, Public Works staff and Parks and Rec staff are working with the sponsors for the Wine Festival in trying to get the front of the house ready. The contract for the house does not, and never did, include tree trimming and mowing and hedges and things like that. The outside things, it was really just the structure. And there are a lot of dead trees out there, or dying trees. We've had an arborist and our own staff go out there and look. We've actually tagged and marked a bunch of things. But we need a power outlet off the existing electrical services out there. And we're going to be starting extra mowing and trimming. I noticed today that they actually have now moved the fence back, the barrier fence, the orange plastic fence, back to the kind of the transit roadway in the front of the house where they bring goods in and out of there, so we can start working on that area, because the Wine Festival is actually going to be out in front of the Pleasant Grove House this year. There's kind of a natural bowl where the stage will be, and then the wine vendors will be up top, and nice shady and sun areas for people to sit to enjoy the music. but we need to get that work done. We don't know what the cost estimate of that is yet. We've been getting estimates from a number of firms to do the tree work especially. There's some trees that we just don't have the capability to take down because they're way too big, and so we'll see what those costs are. And I'll get back to you with numbers. The new Pleasant Grove house, as the house gets done, we want to try to move forward pretty quickly on the signage too. I think I'd shown you some mock-ups last summer or fall with the two brick columns, but we're considering and really just wanted feedback from the board on putting an electronic roller, not necessarily red letters, but maybe a less kind of dramatic white lettering, LED lighting from both sides, so that we can have announcements done for barbecue bands and brews, wine festival, county fair, things like that. And if it's an outside organization that's doing it, and Parks and Rec has talked to, and that it may be reasonable to charge a $5 per day announcement fee, and if you put an announcement up for 20 days ahead of time, that's only $100. That's pretty cheap advertising for all the traffic that goes up and down Highway 53 there. But we're getting cost estimates on the actual brickwork, the signage itself, the big Pleasant Grove sign, and then the bottom roller portion in LED. Now, if we decide to go that route, we don't necessarily have to do it all at one time. We can do the brickwork and the main sign, and then if the roller sign ends up being too expensive, we can always try to do it for budget season for next year. But again, as soon as we get those cost estimates back, we'll let the board know and find a way ahead for that. This year is the 100th anniversary of the Virginia Cooperative Extension, and as you know, they normally do an annual dinner. It's before you used to be 2 o'clock in the afternoon meeting, so in September, October, they would do a dinner for the board and talk about programs and things like that. But because your board meeting is now at 4 o'clock, the early meeting, they wanted to do it as a dinner, and so they would do a dinner at 5:30 before your 7 o'clock meeting, so you could be done by 6:45 or so and then come over here for your 7 o'clock meeting. So that'll be on September 17th at 5:30 here in the Morris Room, and we'll get the information out to you for that. But just remember that second meeting in September will be a dinner pre-meeting, a dinner before the meeting. I guess this is the best news of the year. The school's year-end balance ended up being in balance, and the $200,000 to $400,000 estimate is no longer required. And so that's a great job. The schools have done
great. Do you know how that came about?
Yeah, we actually talked to the finance department, to the superintendent, and there's a lot of things that they squished on, restricted, adjusted, and not such that it's going to be required, the dollars are going to be required later. They just conserved really well, and then the dollars, that the shortfall was getting a little bit smaller anyway, but then as they did that, they could maintain within budget. I think they're at about $70,000 remaining in the fiscal year now, which is much better than a $400,000 shortfall.
That's great.
So we'll be working with them on they have some ideas. The school superintendent and the assistant superintendent talked about some ideas of some potential needs that some of that $75,000 that's left could be used for, that it would then cost, you avoid that cost in the next budget year. But we'll look and see and bring those proposals to the board. But at least that big bolus of 200 to 400 is no longer required. It's great news for the fund balance. VACO conference is in November over the Veterans Day weekend, as every year. If you want to go to the conference this year, make sure you let Mary Weaver know as soon as possible so we can get your hotel reservations. If more than a couple of you go, I've already got my reservations, and I can just transfer those reservations to one of you if two or three supervisors want to go as well. But make sure you let us know soon, because those reservations at the hotel where the conference is, and go fast. Okay. So this week or next week, please let us know, because we can book those and get them booked.
Okay.
And then we have a new management analyst on board. I think you saw the email I sent to staff. We're pleased to have Mariana Twisdale. Mariana's in the audience here. Mm-hmm. Mariana Twisdale is on board as our new management analyst and accountant in finance. Comes to us from the city of Charlottesville, where she was the finance office administrator, and has an incredible background in local government and agencies in finance and accounting, and really brings great skills to our finance department. A great addition there, and helped replace the loss of our previous finance director. But the other good thing is that she's a county resident. She doesn't have far to drive, so she comes to us from Lake Monticello. It's an easy drive to work, much better than going to Charlottesville every day. So, and I'll be on vacation at the end of next week and the following week, about 6 or 7 days. But Mr. Popovich will be covering while I'm gone, and be back before the next board meeting. Any questions? Oh, I'm sorry. One more thing. So your next meeting is August 6th. You normally only have one meeting in August, and it's normally an afternoon meeting with an evening session as needed. Now, if you've got a deferral from tonight, if you do that deferral on an SUP, you can. There is sufficient time if you make that decision tonight to advertise and have that item at the 7 o'clock meeting on August 6th. That's one option. Secondly, I really need to do a capital projects update. We're getting, you know, overwhelmed with the amount of projects that are cooking, and I want to give you an update on all of them, but there's a lot going on with all these projects that we've already had underway, plus all the things that are on the CIP that were approved for this year. So I want to give you an update on that, and we need to do some work on strategic initiatives. So my recommendation is to hold your 7 o'clock evening session, even if it's work session related with these things, or if you have to have a public hearing as well. So I wouldn't recommend just planning on the 4 o'clock meeting. I'd recommend I'm planning on both. But that's, you can decide that sometime tonight. Just let me know.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I would like to move through some of the agenda items and go to SUP 14-02 and ZMP 14-01, Hotel Street Capital, LLC. We have some additional information to come to the board and additional staff recommendations on changing some of the conditions that was in the report. And in order for the applicants, for the public, and for the Board of Supervisors to review and study and look at these changes, we need to defer and schedule this public hearing at a later time. We'll advertise the information will be available to the public. You need to know everything that we know when we make decisions so that you can make comments in relationship to everything that we have. So I'm asking for a discussion with board members, and if you're in favor, we need to have a motion and see and move this on out of the way. And you have copies of the changes and some of the conditions, and you have also a letter that was not a part of the packet.
I wonder if there's any pass-outs that you might want to give the public or anything. This information, this is the first that I've received it a little while ago. I knew about it, but I didn't receive anything on it. I'm certainly disappointed that it's obvious that no action is going to be taken, but I hate to see people come out and then have to
do it again,
you know. So,
a little explanation. There was a document that wasn't included in the Planning Commission packet, nor discussed, and no one on the Planning Commission had any knowledge of it. And I received it 7:30 or so this morning, and I believe Mrs. Booker too. So, in light of that, it makes a difference in the information. And then at 3 o'clock or so, we were issued changes to motions that
conditions.
At Well, there were changes to the motions that I myself spent hours and hours on 13, 14 days ago, just after the last meeting. And it didn't sit well with me at all, and I don't think it sat well with other board members. And that's something that needs to be, this is too important an issue, whether it's turned down or whether it's approved, to not do right. And I think no matter what someone's feeling something, we all want to make sure things are done correctly. And unfortunately, can't be done in a matter of a couple hours. If this was something simple, you know, we could just get by it. But I think in this light, you know, it's the only right way to do it. I know it inconveniences 60 folks that are here tonight. Believe me, we all see it, and we all know you're here. But you got to understand that we have a lot of responsibility, and it weighs on each and every one of us. So we're going to do it right. So I mean, you just have to bear with us.
Thank you, Bob.
Well, you know, we really don't know whether it'll make a difference in our decisions or not, since I just started reading it a few minutes ago. So, you know, we maybe have come with the same thoughts after we hear from you, but it's one of those things that we don't know, and certainly we all regret it.
Anyone else have any comments?
Second. And I second.
Okay. It has been a motion by Mr. O'Brien, second by Mr. Olivebrook, that we defer SUP 1402 and ZMP 1401, Hotel Street Capital LLC, until August the 6th. 7th. Is it 6th?
6th.
Yeah, 4th is Monday.
Is it the 4th?
No, August 6th, 7
August
p.m.
August 6th, right, 7 p.m. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. And we apologize to you all. And thank you for coming. You want me to say your name? Your lips? Okay, but you're welcome to stay the rest of the meeting.
We have snacks.
All right. We will go to the Board of Supervisors updates.
The rest must be boring.
Well, I will apologize for not making it to the RAB meeting.
We'll wait until.
For missing the RAB meeting. I forgot to let you know I was at a coach's clinic in Lynchburg. I had to take a class. They're trying to educate me. Figured you'd laugh at that, Brian.
Can you hit me?
Were you making an excuse?
I didn't make an excuse. I just told him where I was. I apologize for not saying, telling him where I was.
100% from now on.
I don't know about 100%.
99.9. All right. Mr. Weaver, I think your committees are all haven't met.
No, they haven't. I forced to you. We haven't met for really some time, so it'd be up to you.
Okay. All right. And Mr. Barr?
I was on vacation.
That's right. You were on vacation. Okay. Right. All right. Well, I think I've been to a couple of meetings, but you reported on one that the extension agent said that was one meeting that I attended. Java hasn't had a meeting, so that's about all. Okay, thank you. Public comments. I'm going to open the first public comment time, and if you would come to the podium, give your name, your address, and address us. You have 5 minutes to address the board. We do have 2 public hearings, so if you have some comments about the public hearing, wait until those public hearings are called. But if you have anything else that you would like to speak to the board about, this is the time that you may do so. Do we have anyone? Okay, if not, I will close the first public comments. Okay, now we have a public hearing. I want to read the public hearing rules and procedures. I have to probably do that a little bit more often, but the purpose of the public hearing is to receive testimony from the public on certain resolutions, ordinances, or amendments prior to taking action. And a hearing is not a dialogue or debate. Its express purpose is to receive additional facts, comments, and opinions on subject items. So as I said, you need to, it's the same as if you were going to make comments, you come to the podium and you have 5 minutes to speak, you give your name and you give your address, and we do not entertain questions, but we will certainly get back with you if there's a question and that we need to answer it later, either through staff or et cetera. Okay, so our first public hearing is SUP 1403, Jeff and Gail Stoneman, Commercial Count. Mr. Steve Tucker.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. This is SUP 1403. It is a special use permit request for a commercial kennel. And it is with respect to 2.631 acres of Tax Map 30, Section A, Parcel 84B, Zoned Agricultural. And the applicant is proposing a commercial kennel in conjunction with their single-family residence. They wish to construct an approximate 30 by 60 residence with an adjoining 60 by 90 commercial kennel with accompanying fenced-in area. This is a locational map. You see this parcel here where the red dot is? This is an aerial image. Again, 2.631 acres just south of the village. A few photographs for the board. So, in consideration of the special use permit, we consider two guidelines as prescribed by the zoning ordinance, that you should not tend to change the character and established pattern of the area or the community. The kennel will be located on a 2.631 acre parcel with frontage on Route 15. It's just south of the village. The kennel is proposed to be 60 by 90 with an adjoining single family residence. The property does contain vegetation, which could help reduce the noise that the kennel could contribute, and screening through neighboring parcels. Noise exposure would be further mitigated through the use of special insulation in the building. It does not appear that a commercial kennel as proposed would alter the character of the community. Secondly, the proposed use should be compatible with uses permitted by right in that zoning district, shall not adversely affect the use or value of neighboring property. Commercial kennels are permitted by special use permit in the A1 zoning district. The zoning ordinance allows, by comparison, one accessory dwelling unit per parcel, detached garages, storage barns, farm buildings, and the like. The commercial kennel will be located on the same parcel as the Stoneman's residence, would be no taller than 35 feet. Other by-right uses that are similar, perhaps in scale, are equestrian facilities, farm sales, non-commercial greenhouses, and accessory dwelling units. At the June 25th Planning Commission meeting, the Planning Commission did vote unanimously to approve or recommend approval, 5-0. And then in conclusion, it is a special use permit request for a commercial kennel. It would be visible, the residence would be visible from Route 15, and the kennel less visible due to its location behind the residence. Potential adverse impacts could be traffic entering and exiting the property, noise, dust, increase in traffic. Staff is not aware of any additional impacts that could be associated with the kennel. And your suggested motion, and I'll be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Tubman?
Is this a day type operation? Daycare,
I believe that's correct. And one of the conditions is that the dogs will be housed indoors from 7 p.m. to 7 a.m.
But they can keep the dogs there overnight or whatever.
But they're inside.
Inside, yeah.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
But they're outside the day.
How many? During the nighttime, they're inside.
They're housed.
And they're inside the building. Has some shielding.
How many dogs are we talking about?
I don't believe Mr. Stoner has placed a cap on the number of dogs.
Mr. Stoner is present.
I should have a cap of some sort.
Would you like to speak to the advocate? He's here.
That's a question that they could probably answer.
Okay, Mr. Stoner.
Looks like there was a cap.
But he probably does have one in his mind.
Okay, this is Mr. Stone. Board members, do you have any questions?
How many dogs are we looking at, possibly?
Well, Ben, it would have to function to provide adequate income to, one, pay for the property and the facility. I think that it would be reasonable to, on the best case scenario, you might would have is up to 50 dogs overnight.
Okay. Yeah, that's
what
I think it's in here.
Mr. Nichols, it might be in there. Could you bring the picture back up?
Mm-hmm.
The one from above. All right, what are you thinking about the residents in the kennel city?
Okay, it's going to be two.
Laser pointer there if you want.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The big one.
Am I on the screen yet? Okay, just hold it in there. Okay, it's going to be a 200-foot setback from the road. So the residence would be this way. It would be back and forth there, horizontal, whatever. And then the kennel area would have to be behind it. And then back in this area where the dogs would be exercised would be a wooden fence around that area there. So basically what's visible from the road would be the residence. It's an attractive building, and it would have to, like I say, go this way, and then with gables out on the front and then up to the rear.
You answered what I was asking.
Okay.
Thank you.
The shielding material that you're going to use to mitigate noise, is that typical of a kennel? Is it a particular
tiny? Well, what it is, it's called a performance package through Morton Buildings, and it's like 18 inches of insulation. You know, I currently have a boarding facility in Montpelier, and we just have cinder block walls with no insulation, and we pretty much operate the same type of environment. And basically, after 6:30, the doors are closed. Dogs are asleep, and they're all quiet. So you really don't—it's really not that much of a factor when they're housed, and that's why the facility needs to be of a certain size, so that we can accommodate that the dogs in there in a comfortable environment, provide the type of insulation and things that we need to do in order to house them. And basically, the outdoor activity is kind of the walking and the exercising of the dogs, give them a chance to go outside and things like that. And so with 14 years of experience, I kind of know how it works. And it's really not as much impact as you think. If you're not familiar with kennels and boarding situations, the first thought when you hear the word kennel, you're thinking of a dog lot with a bunch of, deer hounds on it. Yeah, and so you're thinking that, they're barking all night every time something comes by, but it's not like that in this type of environment. They basically walk during the day, there's some exercise time for each dog, and then at nighttime, you bring them in, and like I said, it's all quiet, you know, and there's no more activity that would stir them up.
During the daytime, how many of them are probably outside at one
time? During the daytime, there's probably, by current operation now, there's no more than 6 to 8 dogs out at one time, and they're in individual run areas, so it's not like you got a bunch of dogs, you know, carrying on.
Is this going to be your residence?
Yes.
Could we put in one of the conditions that there won't be more than $50 housed at any one time? Is that proper?
That's not an uncommon thing to put in.
Yeah, places. I would think we need a maximum because, I mean, do you want $1,000 over there? I mean, you don't open that much. So I think you need a limit. Would that be all right with you or this board? Would that be all right using 50 dogs as a maximum?
Is 50 a minimum for you or...
Currently, right now, what I have is a 50-dog kennel, and it really comes down to finances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're really not busy year round. You really, you know, you got your summer months that you have to take what you can because you can hear crickets in February. You know, that's the loudest noise you get. So, therefore, you know, you can, you know, I mean, I want to be honest with you of what it takes to make the business functional. And so that, I don't say, yeah, 50 dogs and just hoping you don't catch me. You know, but 50 dogs, I can, you know, depending on the cost of the total project, you know, I think is an adequate number of dogs, you know, at any one time. You know, but it's the consistency, you know, that you have over, you know, like I said, when I was first opened up, we were busy in the summer, but in the winter months, you hardly any dogs.
What's the most you can picture yourself having?
I would say that it really and truly 60 dogs. That would be my hope, but... You know, it would be years before you could get to that kind of number. Yeah, that's basically the maximum. 50 is probably a very comfortable number. But it's not uncommon for a kennel to have 300 dogs in it. You know, in a city, but in a rural environment, you just don't have that kind of traffic. You know, you really just don't. It's not there. You couldn't get it if you wanted to.
And your building will accommodate.
You wouldn't have your hands if you put 60 in there.
No. 60 would be very, you know, a comfortable figure, and like I say, that would be nice if I could get to that. But I just, you know, I've been in business 14 years. I've got a business plan. You know, I know what you can expect in the industry and in a rural environment. In order to offer, and our goal is not to be a quantity, but a quality facility. And so, you know, 50 is really what I would be comfortable with. But I couldn't say that, you know, on July 4th, if there were 60 dogs that wanted to pay me, that I would say, oh, no, I don't want your business, you know. So,
well, would this sound all right to you? There shall not be more than $60 housed at any one time.
That's fine.
Would that be all right with the board?
Yeah.
Back to the building construction.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a cinder block building?
No. We our hope is to use Morton Buildings, and we have provided the planning commission with some pictures of what we think it would look like. But it would not. It would be a wood siding on it, and with gables, and so the front, the facade in the front would look like a home. Except the home would be above it, and then in the lower section where folks could come in and drop their dogs off, and we escort them to the back from there. So it would look from the outside more like a home. I mean, it's a very, very attractive building with very nice siding on it.
But we wouldn't see it very much because we'd see your house in front of it.
Yeah, you wouldn't notice
and
it for what it is.
The actual building itself will back up against the
cliff. So we are really from you know, that's the parcel of property. I mean, is kind of unique, and I think with this type of thing, we kind of nestle it up in there and give it a kind of a cozy attraction, you know, for that kind of facility. So give it more like a lodge type look to it, you know, overlooking the Ravanna River.
Will any other animals be boarded there?
Well, we do board cats for the feline lovers, but we do board cats, and that would be, you know, pretty much up front, not in the rear. And that's usually, I mean, based on my experience, anywhere from one cat to 8 or 9. You know, but you don't cat people, you know, usually don't like to board those. You can, you know, throw out some food and,
yeah.
And hope for the best.
And more would be sort of a few birds in the
back. Generally, what we see is a week to 2 week stays, a lot of weekend stays, you know, weekend traffic in my current location, which is very, very similar to this in Montpelier. just outside of the little village of Montpelier, right on the main road, which is the attraction of this piece of property. We get dogs generally the weekdays, 2 weeks days for some folks, and that have the ability to travel for 2 weeks. But by and large, most of your traffic is on the weekends. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you have a lessening of any traffic and all. And I would say, based on industry statistics, you're 50% occupancy. If you're functioning really well, but 365 days, if you had 50 runs, you would base your finances on 25 dogs for 365 days. So that would work out as 50% during the summertime, 100% during the summertime, hopefully, and then like 5% during most of the time. So, really, most of the year, it's really kind of a mild traffic flow.
And in your current location, do you receive any regular complaints?
No. I have far more residents right around you. They have actually built some new expensive homes right across the street. I've got one neighbor who is probably 50 yards from me. He was there when we built. And we've never had a complaint with noise or odor or anything like that. Because one is, you're in business to be successful. People have discerning taste. And so if you don't present a clean, environment, you're just not going to stay busy. You're not going to stay in business. And the cost of construction today and everything, you've got a lot of quality.
How many employees will you have?
Generally, to start out, would just be my family and I, and then over time, I'd like to have at least 6 to 8, part-time employees, and maybe a full-time person. But generally, it offers a lot of opportunity for the high school-age kids to come in the afternoon and work, and then some part-time help just to clean and, take care of things, maintenance and stuff like that.
The effects on the river? No effects on the river?
I can't imagine any. We pick up any pet waste after each shift when the dogs are walked. You pick it up and then we dispose of it. It's disposed of. It's picked up by a provider who picks up trash and stuff like that. So it's not going to be anything there other than just if it were just like a residence something like that. So there's no real runoff or anything like that I know of.
You have concrete kennels and things like that.
There's a concrete slab in there, but the kennels are not there. Today, they're very attractive. I mean, they have glass fronts on them, color size. It's pretty elaborate. But, the main thing is, for me, with the experience, is designing a kennel that can be kept clean and kept smelling well. I mean, we're 14 years, and you can walk in ours at any time, and you don't smell anything inside. And that's probably the number one comment that we get from folks is how clean the environment is. And we've visited a lot of other kennels, and it's a lot of to the design that you make. I mean, you have to be able to clean it. So everything needs to be a little bit more simple, not too elaborate, not wood stuff, but you need type of material that you can clean well and everything. And I think with technology the way it is now, they actually use what they call an AquaVac, which is a steam and clean type thing. So actually you don't even hose the kennels anymore. It steams and cleans and pulls it up, all in one shot. So it's effective.
Okay, do we have any more questions? If not, thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, now I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone who would like to speak, please come to the podium. And I do have one person on the list, Mr. Gallo.
Good evening.
Good evening.
And I'm really not opposed to this special use permit, but I think it really needs some more conditions. And I just did some math, and a 90 by 60 building, even if you take half of it, for other uses, can house at a minimum of 270 dogs. So Mr. Sheridan and Mr. Weaver are talking about numbers. You really need to focus in on that as a condition. Fluvanna SPCA houses 30 dogs on the average, so that gives you an idea of scale. But there's also a health issue involved here. I figured 24 dogs, and I did the math using available figures, and I came up with over 4,300 pounds of dog excrement a year. That's the equivalent of a BMW 740 four-door sedan plus 100 pounds. And if you're going to put a condition in there, it really has to address waste removal, and that has to be strictly enforced. And I think the third thing you need to look at is vaccination. That absolutely the county has the right to send in an animal control officer, and I'm sure Mr. Stoneman would find this acceptable, that they have the right to go in there and verify that every animal in there is licensed, wherever they may have come from, and vaccinated for rabies. Cats raise a really special issue, especially in the watershed. The parasite that is endemic in cats is not treated out of water. It poses a risk to pregnant women. And I think maybe you might even want to look at no cats, especially if there are only 9 cats. But I don't think we need them in the watershed. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to speak? All right, ma'am.
Carol Parsons, 14 Barrett Street in Palmyra. My only concern is, and I'm assuming that it is still an active entity, and that is the gun club, which I think is right next to it. So if anybody thinks those dogs are going to be quiet when all those gun members go out there on either Saturday or Sunday morning and do their thing, I think you're going to have a ruckus there. So that's my only comment. So, in terms of being, with the neighborhood and things like that, there may be some complaints when the gun club is active.
Thank you. Mr. Mullen.
Good evening, Madam Chair and members of the board. Marvin Moss from the Columbia District. I'm not here to oppose this. I'm here to point out what I think is a bit of an absurdity. If you look at the map, and if we could go back to the map, I would just like to point out that this property is bounded by a private resident, Steve Pence's, a conservation easement. No, that's a historic easement. Conservation easement is Mr. Saylor's. The historic easement is on the land owned, and the mill across Route 15 is owned by the historical societies under Department of Historic Resources easement. This property is wedged between two properties that are dedicated to preserving the history and the rural nature of Flavanna County. The problem with this is that this property is still zoned A1. It is completely inappropriate that this property is still zoned A1. I know there's nothing you can do about it. It is by right. He can build this house by right on this property. All I'm asking you to do is to look, or have the planning staff look at parcels such as this, where the A1 zoning makes no sense. Again, you have no choice tonight but to approve the building of this house here. All I'm trying to do is point out, from a planning point of view, this particular property has no business being zoned A1. It's in a village. It's completely surrounded by conservation and historic preservation easements, and it shouldn't be built on, period. But tonight you have no choice in this, and I feel badly about that, but I feel duty-bound to point out to you the reality of the situation that this is casting on the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. Okay, Mr.
Earl. Robert Earl with the Cunningham District, and perfect segue to what I was thinking of with my comments. When an owner has a piece of property and it falls within a particular area that has zoning that allows for, or the term by right, I think sometimes we put that in small letters when it really should be in larger letters. If someone has worked hard, if they've through inheritance or through their own sweat and blood, been able to acquire a piece of property, then by right, if it falls within a particular zoning, I think in the county, it seems that there's a history, and it seems that we're setting ourselves up for a path where the decision comes down, where it's almost a last-minute game of chicken, versus these things being addressed in the comprehensive plan, being addressed sooner on in the process, and that we face these same types of decisions, these same types of pushback on properties that will be in areas that we do wish to see economic development. And so I'm willing to work with folks on the specifications of planning ahead of time. Also bringing out so that an owner by right can use the highest and best use of their property. Also, some of the stipulations that are put on there, I think there needs to be a tremendous amount of clarification as to the burden of proof, shall we say. Gentleman says there's not going to be sound. I don't know the time that I've gone in to drop off a dog that I have not heard some level of sound that's coming out of it, whether they be out in the dog run, whether they be in the property itself. Now the question is, in a planning process, are we going to require them to prove that there's not going to be sound before you approve the process, or is it that we take standards and we take the word of the owner that this is not going to occur, and then once we approve it and it's built, then how do you turn around and enforce it? So these are some things that need to be addressed, not for this specific issue, but addressed as we look at people that are looking to develop, and as we look at that economic development folder that's out there. There's some key areas where we're going to run into the same issue over and over and over again, and there needs to be a tremendous amount of clarification. I applaud the owner of the property for trying to get the highest and best use out of their property and to make it commercially viable and to go through the hurdles that are there. There just may not be the right types of hurdles or the right types of clarification, and this applies to other properties that come before you as a board that you have to make decisions on.
Thank you, Mr. Earle. Anyone else would like to address the board? If not, I'm going to close the public comments and come for discussion from the board members.
I think we should put something in there about vaccinations. I think that's important.
Can we ask if that's a requirement that he...
Did he allow it? Reasonable time, yes.
Do you have them bring the proof of... Can I ask that question? When they check in, do they have to bring proof, verification that they've had their shots and vaccines?
Yes, it's required. Rabies, vaccinations are required for each dog. But rabies, above all, it's the law. So there's really no way around that. Some of the others may be a little more gray, but rabies is just not in this particular area. And kennels are exposed. I mean, the animal control agency, they can come in and check you in down, and then the Department of Health also checks on those things. So it's regulated. It's not very cool.
The cat parasite virus that you're talking about. Can you speak to that at all?
I probably can't. I can just say that the cats are all required to have all the vaccinations, rabies, distemper, say they were required of any homeowner with a cat. I know that it's the issue that you're bringing up, and like I said, those guys have been I don't have any kind of babies.
Okay.
Sure. Noise, as far as noise, that's good. We already have an ordinance in place with noise, so if
we don't. Doesn't apply to dogs. That's the reason for limiting the time the dogs can be outside.
Right, and right now you have up to 20 dogs if you're a property owner right now. property?
Cutting down.
No, we're limiting the number we can have outside.
So you know there's no limit. Right, there's not that many.
Just to the lake.
Always limit the number that are outside at one point in time.
6 to 8
He said 6 to 8
Yeah, I mean, it's probably well above
threshold. So, yeah. So his explanation helped the vaccination and
He's required to check them when they come in.
Well, the vaccinations are, he's right. Any dog in Fluvanna County is required to be vaccinated.
Yeah, sure.
And the dog warden could go in and check that at any reasonable time.
But you don't have to have that as a condition then.
I don't know that you could, but I don't know that it would really add very much.
Okay, that's what I'm wondering.
It is already required by ordinance.
It would be a redundant requirement.
And, of course, the other thing is, if a kennel doesn't require vaccination of dogs, the kennel's not going to last very long. You get one dog in there with one of these diseases, especially rabies, the kennel's gone.
Yeah, that's
gone. You think that putting them in the SUV where they guarantee cool waste or water providers, good thing to do just to address the 4,000 pounds of actual. I want to know how that was measured.
Can we put in a limitation on the number outside at one point in time?
Would that be? They're free to go in and out pretty well, I think, aren't they?
No, they take them out to walk them. You put them out at specific points and times, correct?
Oh, okay, so they would have maybe 8 out of the time, so.
If we said 8 out of the time, would that be a limitation you could live with?
Okay, we're back to the waste products. Are we satisfied that that's going to be taken care of?
How's it going to be taken care of?
He has someone to pick it up.
Yeah, I don't have any
trash
problem unless you want something put in as a condition somewhere.
Well, he said he was going to do that anyhow.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it was brought up as a concern in the planning commission meeting. Well, I wasn't that meeting. I listened to part of the discussion. I'm sure there was some discussion about
But they were satisfied with the explanation. There was
some talk about certainly animal waste around watersheds is a general concern, whether that be pig farms.
Mm-hmm. Is that lift up weekly, monthly, daily?
Trash.
Well, currently they're picked up weekly at our current operation. Just depends on what the provider offers to know what kind of pickup. But, you know, it's stored in, you know, the containers that they provide you, and then they pick it up.
You basically would use one of our trash services here in the county. Nobody special that comes to get you. He just pick up.
Goes in the trash.
All right. They have special trash cans that's provided to the guys. Anything else? Are we ready? Are we ready for a motion?
Do you want to have a condition on the dog excrement?
No, we.
You do not.
Okay. No.
You want me to make a motion here,
please.
Mr. Weaver, if I may, I'd like to be able to get the conditions on the record and stuff. Got it kind of blown up in here with the conditions.
You want to get what on?
The conditions, because you always like to put
that. Yeah, well, there's going to be certainly 8 conditions now.
No, I have them all listed here.
Oh, okay.
All right.
I mean, just because he's going to have the waste picked up doesn't mean the next
one. That's a good point.
You're right. That's true.
I take his word for it, but I'm just saying I would be comfortable.
What I would suggest,
I think he would be comfortable if it's in there.
What I would suggest is if you're going to include that word, something like dog excrement to be removed from the premises not less frequently than weekly and stored in closed containers pending removal.
Good.
Yeah, that sounds professional.
We could be the dog vacation capital of the world.
Okay.
If we have enough kennels, we can advertise.
Well, we're picturing 50 dogs being there. There's not going to be many times there's 50 dogs there. Okay. He hopes that there is.
Okay, we had that. Well, there's another one there. Okay, it'll be nine conditions.
Closed or sealed?
Take an E out of it.
Closed.
Weekly.
No. Just point out that you don't pay either me or Mr. Nichols
to type
for his typing ability.
He's very good.
That's all right.
That's good.
We won't
I
pay too much.
Anyone satisfied with the conditions?
Okay, Madam Chairman, I move that the Board of Supervisors approve Special Use Permit 1403 with respect to 2.631 acres of Tax Map 30, Section 8, Partial 48B, with the following nine conditions, and those can be observed here, with two new conditions added to the seven.
Okay.
So these are all nine. All nine are on the record.
All
two new ones are those.
Eight and nine.
All right. Do we have a second?
Second.
All right. Move by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Ellenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Chair votes aye. That's 5-2-0. Thank you.
Just put it on record. I want dogs as much as children and all people.
They can't go.
Okay. All right. Moving right along. The next one we have is SUP 14-04, Joyce Parr, the Light Academy, Mr. J. Lindsay, planner.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, members of the board. This is Special Use Permit 1404, a request for a special use permit for an educational facility with respect to 6.34 acres of Tax Map 18A, Section 4, Parcel 13A. It's currently zoned B1 Business General. The applicant is proposing a kindergarten through 8th grade school with a kindergarten through 12th grade homeschool cooperative with no more than 50 students present at any time. This is a look at the surrounding zonings. Right around here is the subject property within this B1 zoning. As you can see, it's surrounded by A1, which is agricultural, and R2 and R4, which are both residential uses. Here's a look at it from overhead. This portion right here is the part that would be the educational facility. Right here is the Dogwood restaurant. Around the back over here is Angel's Dance Studio. here's a look at it from center court. Here's the Dogwood. This is the educational facility right here. Obscured by this shrub is the breezeway separating the two, but you'll be able to see that in the next shot. Because of the potential for traffic and other conflicts with the Dogwood, the applicant has proposed to use the rear as an entrance. As you can see, there's quite a few parking spaces. It's a double glass door entry, similar to what you'd see on the front. It's separated by this breezeway from Angel's Dance Studio. Here's the view from the other side. Again, here's Angels. This is the breezeway. This would be the entrance. And this is center court right over here.
Yes, sir.
TRC comments from May 14th. Aqua Virginia stated that the site is served by public water and sewer, and at this time there is sufficient capacity for the use. VDOT stated that the existing traffic signal with right and left turn lanes at the intersection of Route 600 and Slice Road will adequately serve the school. Over 225 feet of corner clearance between 600 and Center Court allow the stacking of vehicles. VDOT does not object to the proposal. The Central Virginia Electric Cooperative had no concerns, and the fire chief suggested that an additional evacuation plan may be required. The Planning Commission discussed this SUP request at their June 25th, 2014 meeting. The applicant, Ms. Parr, addressed the Planning Commission with regard to her request for an educational facility. The applicant stated that the school will be oriented to the rear parking lot and entrance to minimize potential conflicts. Zero people addressed the Planning Commission during the public hearing. The Planning Commission voted to recommend approval of SUP 1404 by a vote of 5-0. Analysis. When evaluating special use permit applications, staff utilizes two general guidelines as set forth in the zoning ordinance. First, that the proposed use not tend to change the character and established pattern of the area or community. The educational facility is located on a 6.34-acre parcel within an existing shopping center. The surrounding area features a mix of residential, business, and agricultural uses. It does not appear that the educational facility, as proposed, would alter or change the established pattern of the community, being that it would be located in an existing commercial structure within a shopping center. And second, the proposed use should be compatible with the uses permitted by right in that zoning district and shall not adversely affect the use or value of neighboring property. As it's located in an existing structure in an existing shopping center within B1 zoning, and neighboring properties include a restaurant, a dance studio, and a preschool, it's not foreseen that this would adversely affect the use or value. There are other commercial uses nearby, and the residential uses should not be adversely affected by the operation. If approved, staff recommends the following conditions. The maximum number of students on-site at any time during the academic year shall be 50. Regular school hours of operation shall be 7 a.m. through 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Board of Supervisors or representatives reserve the right to inspect the business for compliance with these conditions at any time, and under Section 2217.4F.2 of the Fluvanna County Code, the Board of Supervisors has the authority to revoke a special use permit if the property owner has substantially breached the conditions of the special use permit. In conclusion, the request is to operate an educational facility within a tenant space approximately 1,800 square feet in area. It is located in an existing shopping center in B1 zoning. Students would be limited to 50 at any given time, and staff is not aware of any additional potential impacts that could be associated with the proposed educational facility. And this is the suggested motion, but of course we're open to questions.
All right, any questions, Mr. Lindsay?
The one thing I thought of, the parking-wise, if you have 50 kids, let's say you've got 30 parents or 25 parents dropping off, you're looking at 8 parking spaces?
There's significant parking spaces.
I know, right in front of
they've also changed the traffic pattern for drop-offs.
Well, I was going to say, right, where they could loop around that was one thing I was going to add.
It's like that's out and then drop back off and then come back out, so they don't have to cross over except past the school.
Right. Mike, that's my old store.
Right, I know exactly where it is, right. So that's just so they can make a loop right there and just use that as a drop-off.
They'll go towards the preschool in the back of the property, turn in to in front of the old country store, come down and drop off in front of the school, and then back right up to the right-hand lane to go to the street.
And that's used.
Just make
that's used now as a church, and it's
right.
And it's there's plenty of spaces.
But one question that came up at the Planning Commission was a lot of discussion about the hours of operation and the usages after hours and potential weekends. Planning Commission just changed it to 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. That if this is a commercial area, and if this is going to be used as a school, and if they're intending, as Ms. Parr talked about, to potentially do some adult classes in the evening, or some like piano lessons after school, or things like that, I'm not sure that weekend use would have any disruption on that commercial area anyway. So you may want to consider, rather than having the applicant come back, you may want to consider adjusting the hours if you would be comfortable with that, rather than having to come back and ask later, like, we want to do Saturday classes, or we have a Saturday special program. That's just a
right. I don't know how that would be phrased, but again, I've listened to some of the discussion. I can see the concern about, you know, children and, you know, potentially people coming in and out, you know, later hours, things happen at bars. So I can see that concern.
I can understand
the back entrance.
Well, so
that
entrance, Ms. Houston, Ms. Houston doesn't have daytime, so school during the daytime hours would be no conflict because she doesn't have classes, I don't believe, then.
I guess in more narrowly defined times might be, you know, and adult education,
The applicant can tell you what she'd be interested in, but I'm just suggesting that you have some flexibility if you want to adjust the hours and not have to adjust them later.
Mm-hmm.
There's no residential in that area anyway, right. It's all commercial.
Yeah. What was the reservation for Saturday and Sunday?
It really wasn't discussed at the Planning Commission. It just didn't really come up. They talked about, the planning staff was there and Mr. Payne was there, they talked about during the weekday, because originally I think it said 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. or 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Right.
But there was questions about, well, they're saying the teachers come early and sometimes we have some evening things. Mm-hmm. And so they talked about expanding the weekday hours, but it never got addressed on the weekends. And maybe Ms. Parr
conditions such as, Monday,
talk to Mrs. Parr.
Why don't we have 8 p.m., a 3-to-1 ratio.
Right. Why don't we have Ms. Parr come up and let us talk to us about what she's thinking about weekends and things like that.
It would just be a potential flexibility.
Right. I'm thinking.
All right. I appreciate the opportunity to address. We were thinking about running it like a school. So sometimes there's weekend activities. I know there's a preschool behind, there's a church. Sometimes they have a yard sale. So if they were having a yard sale and it's indoor, we might want the opportunity to have our parents bring in and do a yard sale. We were thinking, I know that the preschool, the church sometimes use birthday parties there. We were looking to possibly, for extra income. Charge just like a school would rent the facility. We were thinking maybe we'd rent it for a birthday party or a bridal shower. There's really not a lot of places that you, if you're not affiliated with the church or if you're not affiliated with the lake, to have a bridal shower or a baby shower. We were thinking, I know there was a discussion about tractor trailers. We certainly wouldn't be allowed to by our landlord anyway to do something like that. But we were looking at, if you have a night class that starts at 7 because parents have to go home and feed their children, then, it might not get over right at 8 o'clock. I mean, it might need to be, if it's a constitution class or it's a beading class or an art class and the ladies like to talk afterwards, we wouldn't have children out during that time, but we just were thinking flexibility of things. Any programs that we plan to have, we hope to have in another facility because we don't have a stage or anything like that. When we were thinking about that and brought that up at that meeting, all I know is schools because that's how my background is in public and private education. And I was thinking, we can use the space for this and this and this and that. And so be dishonest.
What do you think about talking about the weekends? Would you want to maybe have some time in there?
Yeah, we would like the flexibility that, let's say, a family in the school wants to use the facility for a birthday party and it's raining outside, to rent that space or to even say to the public, we have this space available if you don't want to rent Curiesbrook or you don't want to rent some of the other facilities. Just to generate a little income, we are small and we are trying to do fundraising type things. If we want to, I know, sometimes they do at the preschool, the moon bounce, a kickoff. It might be an outside fall festival thing. It might be before a special event. We're talking about doing some things together. It would be sad if we could say, your preschool could do it. We can't. We can't participate because we are only allowed. You know what I'm saying? It's just, we would be very responsible. We're thinking school. We weren't trying to. I didn't know if I needed to get a commercial or another type of business and sign my lease under both of those, so I have a little daycare freedom. If I did offer early drop-off or after school, that falls under daycare according to social services. We're not there yet, but, it's a licensure thing. It's not hard to do.
So you may have to come back on those, Cuddy.
Yeah.
You don't want to have
no, it's
hours
it's
or
it's own for daycare.
She would have to make one for the special use, but not for this or the hour.
We're looking for hours, a different set of hours than this 7 to 8. Yes. Yes, please.
Let me make a couple of suggestions how you should approach this. Number one, some of these uses she's talking about really aren't school related.
No.
Mm-hmm. On the other hand, they may be permitted anyway because it's a B1 mm-hmm. use. I mean, it's a B1 district, so maybe I was just looking at the ordinance and there are things in it like, and I'm sort of picking these a little better than at random, but not much. There are things like indoor entertainment, indoor recreation facilities. Those are permitted by right in the B1 district. Restaurants, taxidermists, things like that are permitted by right. What I would suggest is that you not worry about things that are not school related. Mm-hmm. And then the next question becomes, as to things that are school related, what's the purpose to be served by the hours of operation? Typically, when you put restrictions on hours of operation and special use permit, it's to protect neighbors from adverse consequences like noise and traffic and things like that. Obviously, this is a different situation than a lot of cases because, you know, you have a parking lot, it's designed for traffic. It's commercial. You expect to have people coming and going. I wouldn't expect that you'd have a lot of noise. I've always kind of wondered about people being opposed to hearing children laughing and playing and things. And I don't think you need to be concerned too much about that.
They won't make
I recognize enough Mr. to wake up those folks. But other than Mr. Oliver, nobody's. So what you may want to do is think in terms of if you're going to limit the hours of operation, what's the purpose of that limitation? My memory of the Planning Commission's discussion of it was, what do you want? Mm-hmm. And the applicant's answer was, in effect, the school would typically go from such and such in the morning, such and such in the afternoon, but we may have after-school classes, we may have adult education in the evening, we may have whatever PTA is called nowadays, meetings like that, we may have plays, things like that.
Movie night, anything like that.
But the question is, if it doesn't serve a purpose,
right,
don't
have
it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to strike that. Anyone have anything else that
we're
going to
discussion?
We don't limit the hours on our schools.
Any kind of discussion, anything else?
Well, and I have a question because he was looking at the zoning. I believe it says daycare as well, right, in the zoning?
There was a daycare center.
Right there. So if I add early drop-off, right now I don't have any students that are interested in that, but if I add early drop-off that starts at 7 o'clock in the morning, right, it falls under daycare for social services, which then if I do after school, it requires licensure from day school. So that even
but these are the children that's attending your school being dropped off early like they
Madam
do.
Madam Chairman, these are different issues.
Right. Yeah.
Because if you had... been a while since I had children in school, but my memory is if your child my memory is if your child needed to go to work early or something, mm-hmm. you needed to drop your child off,
right,
schools typically have early drop off.
Early drop off.
And they have late pickup.
Right. So it's not a date.
What I'm saying is
I don't think it's
social services may require those to be regulated, but for purposes of zoning,
right,
I would think it would be daycare if they're for children that are not enrolled in school.
Right.
Then that would be a different issue. But for children who are in school there and they're simply there waiting to start their school day or waiting to be picked up after the school day or getting extra instruction or something like that, that's part of the educational facility. So I don't think that needs to be addressed separately.
Okay. But even some by right uses may be subject to licensure or other approval.
It may be, but it's not zoning.
But not necessarily zoning and not from the hours of operation.
Because it gets a little cloudy. I mean, if we add that potentially, you know, after school early drop-off, it does become daycare.
Are you trying to talk about it?
Okay,
no. So that doesn't require an SUP. It requires
no, but I with some of those other uses, I just want a clarification. So I know.
Okay, well, you're ahead. You know, the judge is the same. I'm about to rule for you. You're ahead.
Should I go sit down?
She's trying to get ready to mess up.
A judge of my acquaintance used to say, be quiet, you're winning.
You're right, you're winning. All right, now I'm going to open the public hearing. Anyone would like to speak about this SUP? Would you please come to the mic, give your name and address, and address the board? You have 5 minutes. Anyone?
Ms. Carr, don't come back up.
Mr. Earl.
Earl Cunningham District. My concern, because it also ties into Thursday nights with the bingo that's going on, there's not a crosswalk across that way, across South, not South Boston, but the Slice. When you come around that corner at night, you barely see the little outline of legs through headlights, and if we're going to be opening up more kids in that area, I think the idea is to protect the kids. I think the idea of times is because we don't want students or kids walking out while there's somebody stumbling out of Dogwood. And I think just an overall addressing as a future item of looking at some sort of crosswalk that's there. There's no crosswalk there. There's no painted crosswalk over to the CVS across. There's no way to walk on that area there. And so just for the protection of the little ones that are in that area that maybe VDOT or whoever it falls under, we could have that addressed.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a note on that.
We have finished the topic.
Yeah, we have.
Anyone else would like to address?
No one
else. Anyone?
See?
Okay, I will now close the public hearing. Now
we're putting the lights up there, remember. We approved that in the CIP. There's got to be some more light in that.
It's in the Lake Marshall Fire and Rescue parking lot.
Right.
Which may not necessarily help the street as much, but we're working with VDOT to put light on the street because it's very dark.
My shop, we lost very few kids.
All right, very few.
And you may want to stay away from Thursday nights. Just because, and that's a good point, because that's bingo night. So that might be a night that you guys at school might want to.
And you don't want to get away with somebody that's playing bingo.
No, indeed. All right, now we have an action matters, and that
particular one. We might actually do a motion on this,
ma'am. That's right. May I have a motion, please?
No discussion?
We've had all our discussion, right?
Well, nobody asked for discussion.
All right, would you all like some discussion?
Just follow up to Mr. Earl's comments. I think we should request that he not put
crosswalk.
We'll look and see.
Okay.
I'll talk to.
All right, any more discussion?
No, ma'am.
No. It's not. That's public road.
Slice?
Slice road is owned by the county.
Yeah, Slice road, but I think.
I don't think outside. I think it's VDOT controlled outside the gate area or some portion of there. From there in, it is definitely Lake Monticello, but
because
the other one is VDOT right away to that end.
That's
down that across too.
So that's another issue for another day.
Yeah.
Right. I'm saying it just to follow up just the comments.
We will.
Okay. Anyone else who have a comment or any more discussion on this?
I was thinking about it, but I'm not.
But if not,
that's right.
Waiting for a motion.
I love it. I move that the Board of Supervisors approve SUP 14-04 with respect to 6.34 acres of tax map 18A, section 4, parcel 13A, with the following three conditions, and I don't have to repeat them, I don't think. As written.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
It's been moved by Mr. Ollenbrook and second by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Unopposed? Chair votes aye. 5-2. And the action matters appointment agricultural forestry advisory committee at large has been deferred. Now we have presentations. Mr. Eric Hess, additional school resource officer.
Sure.
Excuse me. Sheriff. Sheriff. Why is it Sheriff? He knows.
Red button. Okay. Madam Chair and board members, thank you for allowing me to present this to you today. School resource officer program in the county is very important to us. I'd like to start out with a little historical data. If you remember, 5 or 6 years ago, we had two school resource officers here in the community. We had one at the middle school, and we had one at the high school. About the same time, we had an independent auditor come in and do a study of the sheriff's office, and they determined, and I couldn't find that today, but I know it was between, we were either 4 to 6 positions down based on our office to operate in a safe and effective manner. During that same process time, the board did away with our four part-time bailiffs in the courts. What we had to do there was we had to take away your school resource officer from the middle school, and we had to take one deputy from the road, put into the courts to help cover the courts. Two years ago, we had to eliminate our two civilian staff part-time members in our office, which we really hated to get rid of, to create two part-time bailiffs to assist with the courts. Since this time, we've rearranged and done a lot of things in the office
I guess we can dance.
It's time
to dance.
Miss Houston's class is here.
I'm sorry, sir.
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I don't know what to do
today. No, I'm not going to tell you.
It doesn't take a whole lot to figure out.
All right.
Since that time, we have used interns to help fill in for some of the paperwork and the other tasks that their civilian staff had performed for us. And the rest of the command staff had to pick up the difference in their workload. Very soon in the future, I'll come back to you with another volunteer program that we will present to you, but we're not going to go there at this time. But we intend to use some volunteers in the future and create another program to help young people here in the community. As far as the... Red's not working.
The right button.
School Resource Officer Program has been established in Fluvanna County for over a decade. The school community and the Sheriff's Office has benefited immensely from this very proactive program that has made thousands of youth and their families benefit from this program. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go. What are the key roles of resource officers? Ideally, they are in the school and they become a positive role model for the students in the school. The high school is a place where our only resource officer is now, and unfortunately, because of the overload that individual is on a daily basis responsible for all the elementary schools as well as the middle school, he can't always be in that proactive response mode. He's more or less dealing with day-to-day things. In other words, he's not able to go and do some of the things that he'd like to do. Law-related education is a good example of that. If they don't have the time to put on the classes for the elementary school, middle school, the high school kids, and to teach them these things, the teachers certainly don't have time to deviate from their lesson plans to cover that. There are community liaisons. They work with the schools. They work with probation and parole and other agencies in the community, and especially with the parents to get the kids on the right track. And foremost, they are law enforcement officers. DSRO is completely integrated into the school and the school system as part of the faculty, even as an administrator role. SRO is more than an officer in a school waiting for an incident to occur. He or she should be providing these educational programs covering things like gangs, driving, safety. There are just endless classes that smoking prevention. There's just endless programs that could be put on for the students to learn in their environment at the school. The SRO is an integral feature of the school. Safety, of course. Lately, we see lots of schools start to take a step back and look at their crisis plans and look at their emergency plans and look at the school's physical security, as well as putting into effect the planning, drills, and practices necessary to facilitate a safe environment. In the last year, the Fluvanna Sheriff's Office has provided threat assessments for every one of our public schools as well as our private schools. We have made presentations to the administration as well as the teachers, and we've identified areas that need to be addressed for the facility to become a safer place. The school has made steps to improve their measures. We have them here if you have any questions as we move along or with any of those, what things they might be in the process of doing, you can certainly speak up and ask. There are some of those who are being trained in crisis intervention techniques. What is that? That's a week-long course you go to learn how to deal with people that are in crisis, mostly mental health. It's very intense school, and our goal is to have every officer attend that school. Active shooter training, another very important training, and we have implemented that in our office, and we've done some refreshers training with it. The next phase of that, we would actually work with our other first responders in the area, the Virginia State Police, as well as rescue and fire. Everybody has a crucial part in the response to an active shooter, so we all need to be on the same page. Area school vulnerability and safety assessments, we've talked about, we followed through with that. Gangs, school resource officer needs to know a lot about gangs. He or she needs to be able to identify people that are wearing the colors of gangs, possibly in the schools, as well as doing the gang signs and other things that might indicate that these people may prospectively be looking at being part of a gang. Crime prevention through environmental design. What is that? That's basically, could be anything from the lighting around the school to putting a fence around a propane tank to having key access, card swipes to get into the schools. It's just a way of looking at the school and how can I make this school a harder target? The same thing you would do if you were trying to make your home safer. The schools have made recommendations in some of these areas, installation of access control systems in all county schools, ID requirements for staff and visitors, developing positive behavioral intervention programs, proactively addressing discipline issues, and providing crisis training for their staff. More SRO involvement. The schools themselves desire the SRO integration. Over the last year, I've had teachers, even school bus drivers, come to me and talk about the need for younger people in the elementary school and in the middle schools and how important it is for those young children to have exposure to a law enforcement officer, to gain their trust and respect, and to be able to come to them when they have issues, and for us to be able to go to them when we know that they are having or dealing with problems, whether at home or in school, or maybe just something personal. More students and parents need to connect with the law enforcement in a positive manner. The SROs need to be able to collaboratively integrate more into intervention programs that we talked about earlier. They need to be a part of that. They need to be working on those on a regular basis, not just be responding to incidents in different schools. We need to have an additional resource officer. Here are some trends, and the offenses against persons in the kind of the goldish color there, disorderly and disruptive behavior in the red, alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs in the red, and I apologize, the green one fell off of there, but that represents property crimes such as thefts, iPads, iPhones, money, tennis shoes, anything like that. As you can see, we had a little lull in 12, but look how things have spiked back up here in 13. We don't have all the data yet for 14. So we have seen this upward tick. Here again, the referrals. We've had roughly 3,758 referrals for the, and that could be anything from a student being tardy, somebody being accused of smoking, bullying, cyberbullying. It could be one of any of these things. The breakdown is basically you have about 2% of those referrals or less are at West Central, 5% give or take at Central. Carisbrook about 7 give or take. Flavetta Middle School is at 10%, but look at where you go to once you get to the high school. And that's the point, the 76 roughly percent that you have in the high school. Why can't we head that off, more of that, by having that individual in the middle schools and in the elementary school and working with those kids and have them better prepared for that integration into the high school? Sharing the care at SRO, more of the SRO's time is required in the high school with the population increase. This is where we are now. He currently spends most of his time in the schools, in the high school, I'm sorry. The SRO's time is reactive to incidents ongoing in the high school site, where it should be more proactive. Response time to diffuse or address situations at other schools is often delayed because the SRO is already involved in matters. And we also have to keep in mind the SRO is always in the school because on Wednesdays he could be tied up in court most of the day with previous cases. He could be doing intake hearings during the week for people that have gotten in trouble, and that officer is not even available at the high school. The SRO doesn't have the availability to integrate into any of the intervention programs currently. Very few programs is he able to help out with. Kind of one of the little graphs showing you how things have kind of ticked up. And matter of fact, did I skip one here? Yeah, no, I didn't.
Is that the incidents?
Pardon?
Is that the incident?
Yes, yes. Right. Why do we have that tick? Pardon?
Is that population?
This is population.
Yeah.
Population.
Yeah.
And that's because the eighth graders had a big jump at the high school.
And
how has that affected discipline, eighth graders? Has that made any changes over there?
I can't answer that for you.
I'm just sort of curious.
My school resource officer wasn't able to be here tonight to answer some of those specific questions, but I mean, if you have anything you could input to Mr. Weaver's answer,
Leach deals with it.
Frank Leach, Director of Student Services for Fluvanna Schools.
Come on here, Mr. Leach, please.
You have a big voice, but
I do, that's a lot. The eighth grade, I don't have the exact numbers on me, but just with the addition of students going to the school, the trend would go up. Mm-hmm. Like the sheriff said, many of those referrals are tardies and such like that, which can increase without the breakdown of that. I don't can't give you an exact for the eighth grade, but I'm sure some went up just due to the numbers.
It would be nice to know if it has any effect with the eighth graders being at the high school as compared to being at the middle school. I don't know.
As far as your referral rate, I can't...
1 year, you can't tell.
Can't give you exact, but it's not a whole lot of difference.
Something I just thought of.
Yeah. There really isn't a whole lot of difference. I can tell you that looking at the past data.
Higher than... Mm-hmm.
They're in another wing.
This represents the Sheriff's Office local trends. Our juvenile involvement... You can see how it's kind of gone up from 11 into this year's rate so far. Basically, what a juvenile involvement is, we're interacting with the juvenile in one way or other, whether they're a victim, whether they're a witness to a crime, or just somebody we may be interviewing. The next one is the juvenile offenders. You can see how they've gone up from 2011 to 14. And these are actually juveniles that we have had direct contact because they were an offender of some sort.
Offenders
of
outside of the school?
Outside. These are our data, yes, ma'am. These are the Fluvanna County Sheriff's Office trends. Okay. This is what we see overall throughout the year. And I don't have a breakdown for summer or anything like that, but just an overall trend of the
But that does include what's at school.
Yes, sir. That anything that would be criminal in nature, yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
That's both. Of course.
Everything. The last one is total contacts with juveniles. Kind of. Once again, across the board, we're seeing this increase. And why are we seeing the increase? Is a good question. I think that if children aren't exposed to the right and wrongs at an early age, and they don't have a positive influence that they can go to, not that the teachers aren't by any means, but do they have the time to do what they need to do? You know, their positive influences in all the academic areas. They can't, you know, they don't always have time to take the time out for the child that has the extra needs or maybe having issues at home or some kind of personal problem that we could probably identify and be able to help them a little with. There's a kind of a combination there. Put them together, still the tendency of an upward movement in our encounters as well as involvements. The SRO proactive policing instruction to all appropriate grade levels in crime prevention and character education. That and the younger you can start, the better. Recently, we went to a couple of the preschools, and I went the day before, and they were there with the ambulance, and the little kids would gather around the ambulance, and they'd stand back at a distance, and they'd be afraid to get close to it. But then once they got in it and were introduced to that ambulance and were told what it did and how it worked, that you couldn't get them out. And it was the same thing the next day when we came and presented our program to them and talked to them. Just in the matter of 30 minutes, how these kids warm up to you makes a big difference. So you can imagine how that would be over a long period of time. Like our resource officer, he's always telling me during the year, well, so-and-so came and told me this, because he's built a good relationship with a lot of these kids. It's similar to like a coach, like you might. You know, the kids will come to you if they trust you, and they'll tell you things, and they'll give you a heads up, and you can head things off before they happen. SRO patrols in all school areas. I could see this extra patrol officer might be at one elementary school one morning as the buses and parents come along, might be at another one the next day, kind of going back and forth. Keeping people guessing is a good way. Intervention programs in elementary school, alternative school settings, we've talked about them. Enhanced safety planning for all schools. Whenever they notice something, they're there all the time. They pick up on things that we might miss just by going there and visiting a few times and trying to do an assessment. Enhanced safety planning for all schools, traffic safety crisis drills, crisis intervention, and then the truancy intervention, which I'm sure Mr. Leach could use a little help on that when an officer isn't available all the time to be able to go out and go to the homes where these kids are consistently missing school. Do I have any questions?
Any questions?
No. We discussed this 6-7 months ago with Sheriff Washington.
Correct.
That's when a grant was up. And I mentioned to the sheriff at the time that if this was important enough for the county, that that I felt that we should not count on grants every year or every couple of years coming up to fund this, that we should fund it and be in more control over that grant had certain parameters that I thought if we funded it as a county, we wouldn't have those parameters.
And the grant was not approved, by the way.
I know that, and I didn't see that coming anyway, so right. I didn't think the grant was going to be. So this is sort of a follow-up that I asked him to come back after budget season and discuss it, and that's why probably here today.
Yes, sir, that's why last year the sheriff's office asked for 3 positions. We wanted to level off the road with 2 deputies, and we wanted that third officer for that school resource
and
communications officer. Yes, sir, we're very grateful that you gave us 1 position. But you know, we're kind of at a position where, you know, we could really, I think that in the long run with these rising trends and incidents with juveniles, if we could even cut that down a little bit, would impact us in the long run from having these negative interactions with juveniles when they're becoming offenders. We want to deal with them and make them to where we have less offenders. Look how much money we're spending in incarceration at Blue Ridge every year. I know we're well over $100,000 this year, and that's just for lockup time.
Do you have a cost
not for maintenance.
You have a cost figure?
Pardon?
Do you have a cost figure?
46 plus benefits, about 65. It would be the ballpark.
And as we discussed, if we talked about it, on the off-school year, that deputy would go on the road or a special...
The current school resource officer is out on patrolling now. And I would, you know, if we had 2, it would certainly be nice to have 1 to put into the areas where there are larger concentration of young people and maybe even on the bicycle patrol or something, send them to an extra school.
Unfortunately, in today's world, it's absolutely necessary.
I know,
when I was a kid, my fear wasn't going to the principal's office, it was going home after I went to the principal's office. And not that it ever happened.
Right.
But, you know, times have changed, and that isn't the case anymore. So,
And the SRO, is he able to teach a class at the high school?
Yes, ma'am. And what I'd like to also iterate to you, and I'm sorry it wasn't in the slideshow, but I wouldn't be here asking you to hire an SRO and bring somebody in that doesn't have any experience. I would choose someone in the agency now that has very good communication skills and would be a good fit for that position, and then take someone, a newer person, and put them out on the road. And that's kind of the way I would work that.
This isn't something we're going to approve tonight, right?
This is a presentation, but we need the sense from the board so that we can come back with financing alternatives for this. I mean, we may have some ability within the sheriff's budget this year because of some military trainings and military deployments where we're going to be down on dollars and a variety of other things. But the sheriff needs your kind of blessing to research this, come back with a proposal.
I've been for it since the beginning, and I sort of promised to address it.
Because we do have some other challenges ahead of us. We have two deputies that will be deployed this year, one for 4 months starting in August, and one for 16 months starting in October. So we have some other obstacles to overcome, but we also need to deal with the classroom. So, you know, if we could have that position right now, it wouldn't cost the taxpayers any money for this year, because we're going to have vacancies.
And always come out of retirement.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions for Sheriff Hess?
Anything else for the schools?
Yeah,
the schools.
This is Keller's thoughts on
this. Thank you. A couple of quick thoughts. First of all, when Sheriff Hess and I had talked, and also with Mr. Leach, and we talked with each of our principals, I guess the best way to summarize all of the focus that you would have with a school resource officer is that you can't always measure what you prevent. What I've seen, and when you look at the data with incidents and referrals, what we do each year is scrutinize not only the number of referrals that are submitted, but the nature of the incident. Is it student to student, student to staff? Is there an increase in actually the anger engagement? The anger involved, or are there things like increase in tardy? Tardy to class, attendance issues, etc. All of those things are symptoms. And what I found, and I know that a bit of it's my counseling background as well, is that when you have school resource officers in your building, you do more than, prevent. What you do is you also teach children as young as you can touch their lives that police officers are there to help us. The reality is that many of our children see law enforcement coming into their home, taking people away. They see sometimes. I've worked as a homeschool coordinator, and I know what happens after there's either domestic violence or there are children who, what we see are increases of children, very, very young children, who are not well supervised. Not because families don't care about them, but because they can't. They've got three part-time jobs piecing their lives together. Children are, you know, the doors are closed, don't go outside. We have children tell me this during lunch. And that's anecdotal, but there's more and more of that through the years that I've been here in Fluvanna. Mental health issues, it's getting a lot of press. I know with Senator Cray Deeds and that issue, there's a lot of a lot more discussion. That's not new. That just, if anything, highlighted a huge need that's not unique to Fluvanna and even to Virginia. Our children deal with more mental health issues, not only in their guardians, but sometimes themselves. And we can have lots and lots of conversations as to about, you know, why we have that happen and why you see increase in mental health issues. What I find too, again, not unique to Fluvanna, is that people flee from division to division. And what I mean by that is that when people are in economic crisis, then they will leave a rural area to go to a city, or a city area to move here. We've had increase in foster placement children. And we work very closely with Department of Social Services, Region 10, etc. Long story short, you have more socio-emotional needs in children that have to be met. And I figure we can do one of two things. We can, and we don't do this, and I'm not saying you do either, we don't do this, I would never do this. It does us no good to point fingers at the people who should be doing something. There's a lot of research on should. Well, it's not happening for these children. So what we are inclined to do is figure out how do we beef up the resources for those children. So do I see it as a need? Absolutely. If I could, would I have one in every school, or at least middle school, high school, and then one to be, I'd have three. I mean, I'd have full-time at the high school, full-time at the middle school, and someone at those elementary schools to really engage and mediate and work with children. Because the younger we can grab them, the better impact and the better chance of impact. So thank you.
The Sheriff spoke a little bit about how the one SRO officer is spread relatively thin, I guess, in relationship to how the schools might utilize two SROs and benefit. You know, is the increase not just that you have a second one, but that the first one becomes far more effective?
Yes. Absolutely, and we've had that discussion as well. He is he's phenomenal. He does a really, really great job, and I would say probably works 24/7. Is always, and I'm not saying that as some superficial universal statement, and it's always on call. I can text him on the weekend and say, heads up, I heard about these kind of issues going on, or I noticed these kids. Well, I have students who will send me a message saying, Ms. Keller, I saw on so-and-so's Facebook, I need to let Mr. Officer Shiflett know. I mean, the children who are understanding that they have a responsibility to reach out. He's very, very responsive. And of course, we have a great working relationship with the Sheriff's Department. But the bigger, sometimes the almost difficult to measure piece is having, I've been in a school system where law enforcement and our Sheriff's Department does this on a regular basis as well, as much as they can, but when law enforcement comes in and eats lunch with children and talks to them about, just their life and how they're getting involved. And students want to know, well, how can I be a police officer? And I mean, there's that community impact, but there's also, again, a different message when you've got a police officer who comes in and sits down with children that maybe 3 weeks later, and it doesn't happen all the time, we know that, 3 weeks later ends up having to intervene in a home, and that child's familiar with this person or familiar with that uniform. I've had experiences where kids are able to say, that person's going to help me. It's a little less traumatic. They see them differently. There's a lot of, I would just say, soft influence, too, that's important.
And that's where officers are trained on mental health issues.
Yes, yeah. I know you can speak to them. Yes, yes. And we've even, through Mr. Leach's work, have definitely strengthened and deepened our staff's understanding of mental health issues and how to intervene. Specifically, a huge meeting today, and one of the topics was how to de-escalate, you know, situations. Our teachers have tough jobs to do. Like it wasn't like Mr. Allenbach said, because my dad would have said that too. He would have said, you sit down and be quiet, and if you don't, your dad will get you when you get home. You behave yourself, and the kid did it. So, yeah. And not that the children are running amok in the hallways in the classrooms. It's different. A little bit different.
The social services
have a perspective. I'm very much in support of adding more officers to the schools. I think I'm worried that one's not sufficient, but it certainly is better than none. We work with a lot of the kids that the sheriff's office does, and know that the connection the kids would make with those officers and how the officers could step in and help and let us know, also to make referrals to us, so we can step in before anything more dire might occur in their lives.
Great. Yeah.
Amen.
I used to have a DARE officer that stayed in the school. And during the summertime, he'd come back and he'd say, hospitals there, you better watch out for so-and-so and so, because, you know, he could relate to them in the summertime. They were doing certain little things in the summer, so it was a carryover in the streets once the kids were out for the summer. So it was very valuable.
We had a long conversation about this. To have a positive role model, to be able to look at that officer and see something positive, something constructive going on, makes a huge effect in these kids' lives.
Absolutely. So what's the board's direction?
A bunch of nods.
Okay. We'll come back. We'll try to do it on August
6th. Everybody, we're not sure as we can after that.
But we'll give you the proposal on where the funds can come from to cover this position.
All right. Everyone in agreement with that?
All about you.
Okay.
Thanks for the presentation.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff. County Fair, Mr. Jason Smith, Parks and Rec Director.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I wanted to give you all an update regarding our county fair and how things have evolved over the last maybe 6 to 8 months.
And isn't that the coolest logo ever?
Did you design it?
No.
It's
growing.
You draw straight lines, not something cool like that.
It took us a few days, but we figured out what we wanted on there. So down on the farm, that's going to be our slogan this year. And we've talked about having that as a competition. Each year moving forward, that will begin the day of the county fair in about a month and a half afterwards.
And the slogans will change.
So every year the slogan's going to change, and we're going to open it up to the community. As a planning team and a committee, and I'll get to that the next page, we're going to review the applicants, the recommendations, and then make a decision and start marketing. The concept here was to... for us to expand on the carnival that Parks and Rec has traditionally ran by ourselves and partner with a number of groups in the community, which are smarter, not harder, and do some great things. Some of the team players currently are the high school FFA, our local Farm Bureau. When you go to the state fair, you see Farm Bureau signs all over the place. Lazy S Ranch, Extension Office, 4-H, Parks and Rec, and a part of Parks and Rec, we also have one of our advisory board members, Wade Parrish, who is participating on the planning team. And these are, I guess, the key players, but our intention is to obviously create a community affair. But the more players that we have, the easier it is for us to create attractions and host events for the entire community. The budget, we have taken our carnival budget for Parks and Rec and converted it into the county fair budget, so there are no additional fees or expenses besides a few entertainment expenses. And what we've done is, as a team, we've come up with a sponsorship partnership package. To date, we've got about $3,200 that's basically offsetting the expense for our entertainment, music entertainment on Friday night and Saturday, and then a few other attractions for the event. This is just a schedule at a glance, if you will. The flyer on the information on the right is something that you've probably seen in the review. That's got information about the Home Arts and Crafts Show and our talent showcase. Thursday night, obviously, we partnered with the high school for their annual pep rally, and Ace Hardware is also going to be present, and they're going to play a major factor in hosting that afternoon. Horace Scruggs with the choir department with the school has actually taken a lead on helping us come up with showcase addendum and helping us with judging and PA system and just facilitating that the rest of the afternoon. Friday we have the Extension Office, who's going to be hosting the horse show. Fun Zone is basically moon bounce, kid stuff, cornhole, music at the park. That's just a fancy term for music and entertainment at the pole barn.
You have a local music?
Exactly. Yep, we do. Saturday, music all day from 9 to 9, Fun Zone, some cool things, jalapeno eating contest, the local Mexican restaurant.
We need to charge for ambulance visits. The ambulance ride.
Yeah, so.
Where goes that $150,000 restaurant?
Yeah, the local Mexican restaurant has partnered with us to supply the materials and host the one-hour event. Havana Arts Association. This is just the tip of the iceberg. I don't want to reveal too many of our wonderful things that we have going on. Arts in the Park, we're going to have a couple artists rotating every couple hours that are going to be actually painting murals of the house or pieces of the park, but they'll also have their art on showcase. And then Dunk Tank, we are still looking for 6 potential local celebrities to join myself and maybe a couple others in the Dunk Tank. Funds will be going to next year's county fair, so. So is that
their home?
There is. There's a home scrimmage. Yeah.
The scrimmage at night?
Yes, Harrisonburg.
Unfortunately,
we'll be done.
We are looking for 6 local celebrities, by the way, for Dunk Tank.
Six chairmen is an obvious.
I think a lot of people would go.
The citizens would probably have.
So here's a list of our partners.
Abrams Building. I think that gentleman would be a good one to ask.
If you're interested, let me know.
Yeah.
This is a brief list of our partners to date. Obviously, we're always looking for friends of the fair. So if you guys know of anyone willing to help out this year, let me know. The helicopter down to the bottom left, we are going to have helicopter rides, $35 for an 8 to 10 minute ride. Some publicity, Wendy Edwards with 1070 AM 97.5 is, I guess, spearheading our social media, our marketing plan. I think we've got about close to 700
friends on likes on Facebook. If you take the helicopter ride?
Oh, that isn't going to do any good.
Say that again?
Will you have a parachute on if you take the helicopter
ride? Couldn't afford it.
You just have to jump out. Call me about
just kind of jump right.
Involved also.
And then Greg Breeden and Larry Arms have agreed to work with us on some other publicity stunts with interviewing Tommy Wood, which is, I guess he's about an hour away, Rutgersville. He's a local guy who's been to Nashville and hosted, opened up for several country music folks. So he's just one of the entertainers that we have. And actually, Greg Breeden with 105.3 is going to have, they're going to have their van out there the entire event, and he's going to be, I think their staffer is going to be there all day Saturday.
That logo, though, is great. Ooh, I really like that.
It's something we can grow into, and we figured, you know, with the corn over next to the Y, we were trying to figure out what's going to represent the fair, the community, as well as putting some other.
You've covered a lot there.
That's great.
Thanks for all the work.
We made it a 3-day activity.
When you ask for suggestions, are you going to try to get something out to schools?
And this
might be a good way to draw in more.
The strength team, we've talked to the.
Well, I was going to say the younger main charge to come up with possible suggestions for the next year's.
We are going to hit up everyone.
Okay.
For sure. Other questions?
But this is free.
It's a free event. That's what we're doing this year.
Right.
We wanted to bring as many folks out as possible. Next year, there could be a fee, but we wanted to get people out.
Thanks for doing this.
My pleasure.
Wonderful.
And just remember, all these new things that are happening and all the good stuff happening, we can only add so much to the stack. So.
Okay.
You all are adding them, so we can keep pushing.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Smith.
20 hours and 12 hours.
Schedule change capital improvement plan.
We'll be on that. So what we'd like to do is this doesn't require any or change in ordinance or things like that. Normally what we do is we have a CIP process that starts in the fall in conjunction with budget season. That doesn't work very well for the finance department. In some ways, it doesn't work very well for the planning commission, who has to do the preliminary vetting on CIP projects. So what we would propose is, if you look at the blue column here, this is what we kind of normally do. In September, we kick it off, we get it out. Planning commission does 2 or 3 reviews. They have a public hearing in December, and they get it to you by the end of December, 1st of January. The problem is that's well late in my budget process because I've got to get the budget ready and be presented to you by the 1st of February. And so we'd like to move that back, really back to July, but in a phased approach. And this year, we'd like to kick off about the 1st of August instead of September and run it through that process. And then have a new process in there where we do, we county minister, where I bring some different department heads in where we sit down and vet items and do some ratings on them. So we answer all the questions before it gets to the planning commission without them having to say, wait, but how about this thing? You didn't ask about this. I don't want to slow the process down, so we'll pre-vet all our projects. It doesn't exclude anything, doesn't take anything off the list. All it does is clean them up and get them ready for the planning commission. And then the planning commission really needs to look at this not from a funding point of view. Their job is not to assess funding and figure out whether we've got the cash to do this. Their process, their requirement by state code is to figure out whether or not it meets our comprehensive plan, if it works within the community's intent going forward. So even though we may have cut down one visit, one planning commission review here, this has been vetted with the planning commission, and they understand this process and think it makes sense too. But once we get through this year and then we went to next year, we would push this all the way back to July 1st. So that once you're done with budget season in April of 1 year and you close the books out and you're getting ready, we'd send the packages out the middle of June. Packages would then be ready from departments in July. We do the process and it's done by October, and that's when I really ramp up on budget season. But I already have the CIP information in hand so I can start putting that into building that into the budget when we're building the operational budgets. So I don't require board can decide however you want this, but it doesn't require a policy change or procedure change. It just requires acknowledgement that we're going to adjust the time schedules on this a little bit. Seems to make sense to finance and to me. Planning has no problem with it, and the Planning Commission has no problem with it. Just wanted to make you aware of it.
Okay.
So anyone, now,
mm-hmm. Any questions? Or anyone have any objection?
No.
Okay.
No. So a couple additional things, though, when we talk about CIP. We've got a CIP threshold of $20,000 right now. Mm-hmm. Now, $20,000 is not a capital project in the year 2014, and I'm not suggesting that the board shouldn't have visibility on projects. Within budget authority now, the county administrator and by our county policies has a $10,000 authority to be able to sign off on documents and do fund transfers and things like that. Things are higher than that come to the board anyway. We already have a capital reserve maintenance fund process where any kind of capital project, or even they're really not capital projects, they're maintenance projects, comes to the board so you see have visibility on it. But I'm not sure that we should be maintaining having this long list of anything that costs $20,000 or more. Those aren't capital in any corporate, any way in corporate America. They may be a lower level of scrutiny. This year we colored your CIP spreadsheet blue for capital projects, and the brown was for the maintenance projects. We left them in there because they exceeded the $20,000 threshold. That's something we probably ought to be thinking about. Maybe you could change the dollar value on what is a capital project. Other things, if it needs to be done, let's say it's a $15,000 or a $22,000 roof repair. That would be in the operational budget under public works, and you would still see that during the budget season. Or those lower dollar value items, something less than, say, $35,000 or $50,000, would go towards the capital reserve maintenance fund process. And every time one comes through on that, you see that report comes to you for approval on your consent agenda. And so you still have visibility in a couple different ways. You could just take those maintenance repair items off the capital reserve or CIP list like we did this year. We identified anything really that didn't meet the sniff test for a capital project. It wasn't new construction, it wasn't major renovations, it wasn't replacing AC in an entire building. Things like painting the outside of the administration building and fixing the soffits isn't a capital project. When it's only a $24,000 project, it's not something that you would normally budget and finance. For those are things normally you do out of operating cash. So I just wanted to get the sense of the board. Do you really want to stay with the $20,000 threshold? Do you want to see a proposal to adjust the threshold? Do you want to move those things into the operating budget under public works, or do you want to move them to flow through the capital reserve maintenance fund?
You increase the capital reserve maintenance fund to $200,000 for both schools and county this year, which is great because now it allows us to plan unplanned things or things that come up to push through that route where you still get visibility, and they're almost always lower dollar value items, $5,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, $20,000, $25,000. But if we continue leaving all these small potatoes maintenance type things in the CIP, it really is just, it just clutters up that process to my point of view and to finance and public works. So that's the opening salvo of a discussion, and just like to get some direction for you and come back with proposals if you desire.
I think it makes sense to have operational budget maintenance items as part of public works, just because it guarantees that it doesn't get deferred ahead and denied until it becomes problematic and puts it inside the budget process, and, you know, provides the flexibility for public works to be able to address without wondering whether they're going to have the funding or not. I mean, deferred maintenance only lasts so long until it becomes
I can pull up the CIP and show you some examples of that, if you like.
That would be good to look at some examples.
No better example than the stuff that needs to be done to middle school right now.
Yeah, and just the little things, and then you...
They are from a CIP point of view, but they normally don't put things that are smaller projects. But if you're going to change the threshold for capital projects, if you change, let's say, to $35,000, then they wouldn't be putting a $28,000 building repair on there. It would be just part of their operational budget, and you don't remove line items in their operational budget. They would still put whatever you consider a capital expense.
We're talking about next budget. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the CIP change as far as the processing, we'll do that this year. Frankly, there's no reason why we can't do it for this coming budget season, where you can move things out. But there has to be kind of a threshold there.
But is it a balance sheet change in the sense that projected CIP expenses that we might fund next year are just rolled into the budget, or
it would just be a line item that isn't there now, but if we move from CIP,
right, well, that's what I'm saying.
So it's dollars, let's just move right across the line.
You're just moving it.
You're just moving a dollar, and that increases the
amount.
For instance, on here, the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund, I would suggest you leave it there, because that's how you're going to fund it. You already have a process on how we spend it, but how you fund it could be part of the CIP, because maybe one year you're going to put $200,000 in, maybe next year you're going to put $225,000, maybe the following year $175,000. So I think you leave that there for visibility, but you already have a process for things that get funded through the capital reserve, but the dollar pot itself I would leave there. But there's many other things down here, like under public works, replace the community center roof. Well, that's $62,620. Now, a lot of people can look at that and say, well, that's just maintenance, just replacing the roof. Except it is in excess of $50,000. It's something you don't just do tomorrow. Normally you plan and budget for those kind of things. So I could, even though that's a maintenance item, I could comfortably see that was something you want to budget through the capital program. When you get to repair administration building exterior, $38,750. Well, that should have been done in, bites over a number of years. It wouldn't have been $38,750. It would have been $10,000 one year and $10,000 next year. That's something that I don't think should be on the CIP. The MAC and building improvements, that was a bigger one. It was one we brought to the board. We wanted to do a bunch of things with it. Now, those dollars are going to be converted a little bit now to do the renovation for a new MACA and small renovation at the old MACA building, because we're going to have to do the same thing since it'll be a maintenance shop. But bigger chunks like that is more important. But a lot of these ones that are $30,000 or $40,000 are only $30,000 or $40,000 because we waited so long to do it. Otherwise, it would have been an operational line item. You would have never seen it to begin with, except in the operational budget. The vehicle replacement, I still think that's a chunk. And while I don't need, you can do this if you want. I don't need the board figuring out what type of model of vehicle buy and all things. What you do is we give you a plan on here's the kinds of vehicles we're planning on replacing, here's the schedule, and then you appropriate a pot of dollars to be able to do that on some schedule. The convenience center road and trailer needs some maintenance and upgrades, $22,000. That's clearly not a capital item as far as I'm concerned. If you've been on that road recently, you know how much maintenance the road needs. If you've ever sat in the trailer with the staff there, with Mr. Opie, you don't want to be there anytime this earlier this week.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things we're talking about. So, A, do you want the threshold for capital things adjusted? Are you willing to adjust it? I would think 35 to 50 would make more sense. B, anything that is going to be a project that's more than, you know, a $2,000 or $3,000 maintenance thing is going to be visible as a line item in the public works budget anyway. And anything that is unplanned or pops up or we didn't get budgeted for will come through your capital reserve maintenance fund request, and you'll see the visibility in those. So it's really a threshold change,
right,
and a little bit of process is what we're requesting, if you're interested.
Okay, are you interested?
I think you should come to us with specifically what you want to do. I think 50 is a little high.
Yeah, I think 35.
I think 35 is reasonable.
Be
I think 50 is a little high.
Okay. Maybe we'll come back with 37.50 because we can look at the last 10 years and see what kind of
methods.
And
you say 37.
We'll look. 37.50, 37.52.
Some of 36 too.
Could be.
All right.
But anyway, we'll come back with a proposal at a future meeting just to give you an idea, and then how we would handle things that don't meet that threshold, and so you know what the process is.
Yeah.
Just by not deferring that meeting.
Yes, because it'll get done.
You're saying
because when you do the CP, people want to move it 2 years down the road. Keep it moving, and as they move it, it gets more and more.
The CIP is really meant to be capital projects,
right,
especially things that you have to get significant dollars for or worry about
finance. Before Mr. Watts leaves, excuse me, Mr. Watts, I wanted to recognize you. Thank you for being here. Mr. Watts was a supervisor many, many years ago.
Watch out there.
And he is
been
with me. My husband too.
Yes.
And it was so good to see you here. Come again. All right. Do you have someone with you? Are you driving?
Yes.
You are. Okay.
Get a head start.
Okay. All right. Oh, okay.
Have a good evening, Mr. Watts.
Thanks.
See you, Ron.
Good evening.
You take care.
Okay. Thank you. She's with you. Thank you.
Okay, we'll come back.
Oh,
to
you are. Second. Thank you.
She just looked for an excuse to leave.
Yes. Great. Okay. Now we're at the consent agenda.
He's got a mustache.
John, you just had a glimpse of the teacher.
5 years.
No, more than that.
The consent agenda.
Yes.
Does anyone like to pull anything?
I want to pull O or zero, whichever.
Oh, four.
Okay.
$1,608.92.
Anyone
else?
True?
Yes.
Wait. Anyone want to pull anything else?
No.
Anyone? All right.
You might want to explain R.
I will, sir.
You gave me an
R. All right, and R.
It comes after O.
Okay.
Yes?
Yes.
Now, can we do O?
So on O, the total was $1,608.92. Last time it was about $1,700, so we're right on the same target we were last time.
Was that a real estate agency gave a large amount?
I don't know that. I don't know. I don't have a list of who the dollars came from.
Okay. Well, we're moving along and improving. That's great.
The treasurer's office.
We might double next time.
We may. You need to put some money in there, Bob. You can double it.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't have a job.
So that was
working here
on tab R.
Yes.
And Tab R, Mr. Weaver asked a good question about this. We were moving dollars back into a department budget, but here's how cell tower money works. We pay our consultant $4,000 to do a cell tower review for us. The applicant pays us $5,500. $4,000 with to offset the cell tower review, and $1,500 is the applicant fee that comes to the county. So these dollars moving here are where we've already paid the consultant, and this is the money coming back in, revenue coming in from the tower requester.
Okay.
So it's essentially just a wash on the books.
Right.
The only gain to the county is whatever the fee is for a new tower application, mm-hmm. and that's normally the $1,500 above the $4,000.
Okay. Any other questions? Can I have a motion on the consent agenda, please?
I guess you want me to make it. We have a motion. Madam Chairman, I move that we approve the consent agenda, which includes the minutes of July the 2nd, VPPA amendments, purchasing officer, the voluntary contribution of the second half, Fluvanna County Public School budget supplement, letter of support for Seven Islands Conservation, and the cell tower budget supplement.
All right, it's been moved by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Ovenbrook. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. It's 5-0. Unfinished business?
She getting another death.
I don't know.
We have any new business?
Get my tongue twisted
out. We will now open our second public comments. Would you come to the podium?
Come on, Mr. Parrish.
And give your name, address, and address the board. You have 5 minutes. Mr. Earl.
Now for the real estate portion of the car quarterly report came out. Robert Earl, Cunningham District. The car quarterly report came out second quarter of 2014 versus 13, 5% increase in overall sales throughout the entire area. Fluvanna saw a medium sales price increase. 191 is a comparison to 185,000. So we did see an increase in price, and we saw an increase in sales in Fluvanna. The overall sales volume for a quarter was the highest that it's been since the second quarter, since a quarter in 2007. Although we're seeing a pickup in the marketplace, we are seeing a tremendous pressure on prices. As you see with the median, we can be off by $4,000 or $5,000, and to some homeowners that means all the difference in the world as to whether or not they're able to afford their loan or whether or not they're able to be able to sell the property. Mm-hmm. But we are seeing an overall general uptick in it, and we'll continue to do what we can to protect the values and get people what they want. But the good news, and it's spilling over to Fluvanna County as well as to the uptick in it. What's that?
Does the car report give any relationship with the appraisals to the assessments?
No, it does not. And there is nothing in the car system that ties in tax data, tax reports. Anytime that we're doing that, it's a secondary report that we have to do. It also does not allow us to do what other jurisdictions I belong to, whether it be in Florida or Northern Virginia, to dump data and then do a secondary matchup. So there's not a correlation of information that we can get just in general. Also, we see the same thing in green, that we're sometimes off because we're in an off year, and the sales that are occurring in the off year of comparison to when the assessment occurs, there's not a correlation that goes on to them. And frankly, as a professional, the more that I can keep that not being the language and the conversation, the better, because the assessments have a purpose and they have a place, and they don't tie to the marketplace or what a ready, willing, and able buyer is willing to spend and what a seller is willing to sell for. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
That good information. All right. Now, if comments, we will end the public comments and we will go close meeting. Mr.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A.1, Section 2.2-3711A-3, Section 2.2-3711A.7, the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, and legal matters.
right, we have a second. All right, it's been moved by Mr. Weaver, second by Mr. Bryant. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now going into a closed meeting.
Where are yours this time? Remember I wore that hat? Yeah. I was on TV with your glasses. They had colored, you know, they were colored and all that stuff. Madam Chair, I move through that account board. Sue Rice. Okay. If you enter me, I'll say it to the visual. Let's see where I am.
Next page.
Next page. Okay. Go date on me here.
That's all right. Take
yes. Madam Chairman, I move the closing meeting be adjourned to the Cleveland County Board of Supervisors to convene again in open session. Be it resolved to the best of my knowledge on a public business matter lawfully accepted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 of the Code of Virginia, 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion of which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
All right, do I have a second?
Second.
All right, it is removed and properly second. All in favor?
Aye.
Mike?
One at a time. Aye.
Don?
Aye.
Both out. Aye. 5-0. Now, may I have a motion for adjournment?
Second.
I beat you.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Have a nice afternoon.
I beat you.
Nice night.
Oh, my God.
10:30. Oh, my goodness.
Well, we're going to do it.